everybody to Presenting Our Presence. It's a monthly podcast that features and amplifies the voices of Indigenous people who work at the University of Alberta. And today with Kyle and myself is our colleague, Derek Michael. Derek, I invite you to introduce yourself in a way that is meaningful to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Florence. And it's such an honor and privilege to be participating in this POP series. My name is, as you said, Derek Michael. I am in a Cree of descent. My father and his family was from Beardies and Okemasis First Nation in Saskatchewan on Treaty 6 territory. My mother and her family were from Métis descent, and so I have a lot of Indigenous heritage in my family. And so I'm coming to grips in terms of what that means for me in my later life. And so I think this is a special opportunity to share this with colleagues and fellow Indigenous colleagues around the U of A campus. I am from a family that comes from a residential school survivors. My father was a residential school student for all 12 of his school years from kindergarten through grade 12. His brothers and sisters also experienced the residential school system, as did his parents, my grandparents, Kokum and Mushum. And so I've had that lineage and that experience and the impacts of what that means for me and my family. And so that is something that's always in the back of my mind, and how, and what does that mean for my identity? What does that mean for how I move forward as a Cree individual? And so that's something that I've always been trying to be proud of and trying to come to terms with. And so that's who I am.
Thanks so much, Derek. Now, I know you recently accepted a new job at the University of Alberta, and I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the work that you currently do at the university.
Yeah, no, thank you. My new role is I'm the director of university development. And so my sole responsibility is to oversee and have oversight and responsibility for pan-university and institutional initiatives in the fundraising development realm. I'm part of a bigger external relations development portfolio that is the one central-based development portfolio. We have seven fundraising units and a donor relations unit, so seven total, six fundraising, one donor relations unit. And so our responsibility is to stand up and work towards fundraising and stewarding and thanking, acknowledging, recognizing donors who support the university in many meaningful ways. And so we work very collaboratively with many institutional partners, strategic partners, our faculties. We fundraise for all 18 faculties. We fundraise for the institution itself. And so that's what I do in a nutshell. It's a lot more involved than that, but maybe we can build off of that as we continue our conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Derek. So a couple of questions come to my mind. And the first one would be, how did you come into this work?
You know, this is the kind of work that, in my experience, a lot of people don't come into it knowingly. They come from other careers. It's a career that you really need to assess as to really what you want to do. And I think there's this intrinsic passion or need to assist and help people. You really have this curiosity. How can you change the world, and how can you help facilitate change, affect change with other people? And so I came in from a legal background. I practiced law. I was a lawyer for about 6 years, and then I just needed to change. What else could I do with my legal training, my natural curiosity, my wish to help people, to work with people? What kind of experience are out there to help me do that? And so I had an actual friend of mine who was in this field at the University of Alberta way back, I think it was 2008, and she needed a maternity leave replacement, and I was looking for a change, and so she suggested that, why don't I give this a try, why don't you, first 6 months, and so I tried it, I enjoyed it, and my career just started from there, and it was just very rewarding, and I just continue on from that, from there, yeah.
Yeah, that's so very interesting. Now, I also think there might be a number of our listeners who would wonder, like, why does a university fundraise? And as you talked about six areas and how you fundraise, I mean, you must have quite a group of colleagues that you work with. So why would a university, or should a university, fundraise?
Well, the university, you know, really should fundraise with the idea that we're trying to create a world-class institution of higher learning, world-class research for teaching, for students, for education purposes. Really, what does those highlights and those points of excellence really want to amplify through private support? And so that we can get through government grants, we can get other sources of revenue that gives us the baseline from which we can deliver all those programming and do what those, what we need to do as an institution of post-secondary learning. But can we really move the needle on those points of excellence, like education, community engagement, research, programming, student success, all of those different things that can, what can we do to really move that needle forward to really make this a world-class institution, to change different aspects of society, different ways of advancing causes in the healthcare, business, engineering, law, nursing, go on and on about every faculty. And that's something we really want to focus on and why an institution needs to fundraise. We really want to be the best and be a world-class institution.
So, sometimes I think about fundraising, you know, when I see those television commercials and support a particular agency to support whatever the cause might be. So it's really interesting to me to hear that you're talking about excellence and excellence in research and student success and teaching. And so, How do you describe your work if you're meeting somebody for the first time who, you know, you might be standing in the elevator? What's the elevator pitch that you would use for a potential contributor to the University of Alberta in this case?
Yeah, I think that the main focus is to really work with people who have identified or have self-identified as being a supporter of the University of Alberta in an area that's important, meaningful to them. If they're a donor of Indigenous students, for example, or engineering, or whatever cause that's meaningful to them, we really want to just kind of align that passion that they've identified with our institutional initiatives. And so it's really more of a customized, personalized engagement process where we're really trying to cultivate a relationship and build a relationship of trust and really have a communicate and align that passion that they have and how we can move the needle, how can we really amplify the excellence in that particular area and to really improve and do something that we didn't think was possible perhaps without that support. And so it's really, what's meaningful for that particular person? What's meaningful to them? How do they want to be engaged with? What kind of activity can we offer that can really enrich the relationship with our institution, with the university, with their area of support, whether it's attending an event, whether it's meeting with a dean, a researcher, a student, so they can really show and see for themselves the impact of their support or their interest. If they're a first-time donor, really kind of enrich that relationship and create that relationship with them. And so that's kind of really what it is. It's not a type of fundraising that we're involved with, that transformational major gift plan giving kind of fundraising, it's really about customized and very personalized approach. And we're really servicing, allowing us to convey our expertise for the donor's benefit and benefiting the university at the same time. So there's that mutual partnership. We're entering that partnership, the journey together to reach a common cause. And so that's really kind of what it is. So it's not a one message fits all. It's a very customized, personalized approach to it.
I think I'm very surprised by that in a way. And because, of course, I'm interpreting based on some of the experiences I have with watching the ads on television, right? And so where on television, it just seems come one, come all. But your work is very relational and building relationships. And how, like, I'm going to ask, maybe this is a trick question, but how do you think your legal background has shaped that? And then who you are as an Indigenous person has contributed to this work as a building a relationship?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. It is very relationship based and it's communication. And so my legal background, first of all, is just coming at it from the point of view of problem solving and just having a natural curiosity. As a lawyer, you have a client who comes to you wanting to solve a certain issue or create a relationship where they can benefit themselves in a business transaction, drafting a will to dealing with their estate, for example. And so it's really just kind of understanding what their needs are and really what they're trying to achieve and what's meaningful for them and finding a solution to help them achieve that. And so that kind of thinking, that logical relationship, communication, problem solving skill set, I think is really relevant to this fundraising arena, because that's really what we do. It's really understanding what they're trying to achieve as you know, through their donation. They have a certain kind of an aspect to it where they have a circle, what we call a circle of influence. It could be family, it could be their lawyer, an accountant. It could be business partners. It could be if they're an individual donor, if they're a corporate donor, that's a different matter. But really, what are they trying to achieve with their money? What's meaningful for them? And how do they really want to use their hard-earned assets to affect the change in an area of passion for them? So finding a solution that matches that and aligns with that. And so from an Indigenous person, I think we're just relationship building, walking the journey together. It's about community. We're trying to build a community. What does that mean? It's a self-determination, a journey of self-determination. What do we want to do to really enhance an area of social impact, economic impact, political, any aspect of society? What does that mean for that individual? And so from an Indigenous perspective, we all know Indigenous perspective, that might mean something different than what a non-Indigenous perspective is. Transfer that knowledge into that aspect. And so it's really relationship based. It's really coming together in a reconciliation kind of a way and coming up with a solution. And so that's kind of where I view it, I guess, where that alignment would be.
Yeah, thanks so very much. And I'm looking at Kyle. Kyle, do you have any question that you'd like to jump in on right now?
Got plenty. I worked in development, or I worked in advancement for a number of years, and can appreciate very much your role, Derek. And looking to your history at the University of Alberta, I understand you started as a development officer almost 15 years ago with the University of Alberta. And as you're talking about, you're facilitating and mobilizing change through this role. And so I'm curious that last point that you were touching on, right, the difference between Indigenous experiences and those that might be available to non-Indigenous students. I'm just curious, you know, what for those who are alumni who are thinking of giving to campus, you know, how does that turn out? Like, what are some examples of events or experiences or opportunities that an Indigenous alum of UAlberta might be able to engage in?
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity. It just, again, it goes back to what area that they're interested in. We just have the, you know, the ATEP program is one example, the Aboriginal Teachers Education Program, the First Peoples House, where it's an all-encompassed institutional-wide Indigenous students welcoming support center, basically. We talk about a lot of opportunities. A lot of faculties are starting to come to terms with how do we advance this area with Indigenous students and faculty and teaching and programming, and really kind of moving forward in the understanding that, you know, the Truth and Reconciliation, what does that mean as an institution? You know, the Indigenous strategic plan that was launched through Florence's team is a perfect example of how we're going to move forward as an institution. And so that kind of a process from an institutional wide, broad scope for not just Indigenous alumni, but non-Indigenous alumni who want to participate in this space, there'll be a lot of opportunities that we can really put forward and in a way that can show tremendous impact. And so when you think about it in terms of reconciliation, that really means we all benefit. If Indigenous students in the space is really enhanced, everybody benefits by that. How does the Indigenous perspective fit into this institution? Quite frankly, when it was first created, wasn't really thought of inclusion, including Indigenous culture and perspectives and knowledge. And so now this is an opportunity for non-Indigenous, Indigenous alumni and donors alike to participate, come together and walk that journey together. And so there's a lot of opportunity and really exciting opportunities coming.
Well, that's huge. And you know, you're talking about this being an emerging discussion, and it makes me think about those tools, you know, that folks in advancement use, right, for evaluation. It's almost like a behind the scenes question, right? How do you measure or engage, how do you assess meaningful impact of these experiences and these opportunities?
Yeah, I think outcomes is very relevant. That's what we all are after. I mean, when a donor and a prospective donor wants to engage in that conversation, they really are looking for impact. They really want to affect change in an area that's meaningful to change in the world, whether it's issues of education, whether it's building the environment or creating a safe, welcoming space for Indigenous students, removing financial barriers for students, whether it's creating a mentorship program, experiential learning opportunities so they can go out in the community and really benefit, Indigenous student could better their community, for example. You know, so it's really the outcomes that you're really looking for. Well, how have we affected positive change? If we're starting off where we have X number of students, where they're, we have only so many scholarships or bursaries available, but there's an unmet need, for example, the outcome would be you can impact the life of another student if you set up another bursary or added, participated in the First Peoples House, giving them more opportunities to enhance their programming, to affect the, make it a more welcoming, supportive environment for more students. So there's, I guess we just kind of look at outcomes is if there's more Indigenous students graduating, getting a more positive experience about choosing to come to the university and getting a positive experience, getting a degree, going off into their communities, taking that knowledge and having a wonderful career, where you have the more curriculum-based programming now that has incorporated Indigenous perspectives and knowledge systems and cultures, that would be an outcome that would demonstrate success. If there would be more faculty, Indigenous faculty that have holding positions of leadership, that would be a success because it just means there's more Indigenous people into the system. They got degrees, they kind of went through the process and they're being elevated to achieve positions of leadership. So there's a lot of outcomes and measurables that would demonstrate success.
That's great. Thank you, Derek. Yeah, that's a nice comprehensive answer. I have a bit of a more personal question. So your experience before you ended up at the University of Alberta, I'm curious if that started 15 years ago, or if you have experience with campus before then, and what was it like your first kind of beginnings at the University of Alberta, particularly as an Indigenous scholar and with the background that you have, and because this might have changed through the decades. So I'm really curious just what insights you have, the experiences with change over those few decades.
I don't think there's any question that the indigeneity on campus today is has increased, without question from where, even 2008 versus 2022. I mean, just the number of Indigenous faculty, the number of Indigenous programming in various faculties. I mentioned ATEC, the e-discovery and engineering, the number of faculties that are in charge of programs, the fact that we have a vice provost of Indigenous research and programming, Florence. That position was created out of the, strategic plan, just that, and now the Indigenous strategic plan that has been developed and now moving forward with that, and just, the number of Indigenous students, and it's just tremendous. You can't even, even the use of land acknowledgements before meetings, not even Indigenous meetings, non-Indigenous meetings at the leadership level. Just that recognition that we have to acknowledge we're on Treaty 6 and Treaty 7 and 8 territories and traditional lands of First Peoples of Canada, and just having conversations about how we move forward in a lot of different programs and a lot of different aspects of teaching and learning. It's just every faculty now is having these conversations to some degree, from what I understand, or will be. And so, the change has been tremendous, and just from, it'd be exciting to see where we are in 10 years, 2012, 2012, and to see where we are, and it'll be great.
Just about University of Alberta, what's the reason to give? Like, on campus, these 15 years that you've been here, like, what's the most beautiful thing you've seen on campus? What separates University of Alberta from other campuses? What is it about this university?
I think it's just, it comes down to the fact that the people, it's just the community, the relationship, right from leadership on down, is that people are so immersed in this idea of embracing the values of the truth and reconciliation. I mean, I keep talking about the Indigenous strategic plan with it, that's just one embodiment of that activity. It's not lip service. There's actually activity happening, and not just in the Indigenous space, but in a lot of different ethnic based spaces as well. Just EDII initiatives across campus, the wide breadth of areas, the 18 faculties, all the great institutes, the international global students that come on campus, the initiatives related to STEM and different minority groups and unrepresented demographics, ISMIS and education. And it's just a very caring community that are really trying to impact change. And I think there's a lot of points of excellence. We talk about all the programming, we look at the rankings and all the great programming across campus, the great things that we do in different faculties, but it's really a great community of caring people that want to do better and do more. And so I think other universities are probably to some degree doing the same, but we do it across a wide breadth and scope of areas that a lot of campuses don't do.
So Derek, thank you so much for this time together. And we've come to know each other through the pandemic because of the virtual teas. And so your comment about the community and even the presence of who Indigenous peoples are in the last few years since your time on, since you've joined the University of Alberta, certainly has been one of the gifts actually of the pandemic, that I have we've come to know one another. And I was so reminded of that. You know, we're doing, colleagues, to our listeners, we're taping this 1 week after the launch of the Indigenous Strategic Plan. And for me, it just made my heart fill with joy when I saw so many of my Indigenous colleagues at the launch event. And they weren't there as single people. They recognized each other, and like there were humans, even though we had been meeting online, you were there, you knew one another, we knew one another. And so for me, it was so powerful, because our community that started virtually and has been sustained virtually over the last 2 years, almost 2.5 years now, was just a beautiful example of when we saw each other at the launch. So I want to thank you for that and for your conversation to prompt me to remember that.
Well, yeah, no, I said exactly the same thing. I mean, I saw some of the people that I see in the virtual teas in person for the first time, and it was just a great experience. It just harkens back to the idea that there is a community of Indigenous staff, scholars, students, faculty at the university. But it was nice to have that community come together with the non-Indigenous community to uplift the Indigenous Strategic Plan, Indigenous community. And that was special. And it was a great event. Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. And thank you so much, Derek. So thank you for joining us and being a guest on Presenting Our Presence. I am so grateful that you've taken the time to share a bit about your work and the way that you contribute to the University of Alberta community. I know that I have come to meet some of those amazing humans that we call donors who are contributing to those efforts that you were talking about. I want to thank Kyle for all of his ongoing support of co-hosting and the technical aspect, and really appreciate our time together today. So to our listeners, thank you for joining us for another episode of Presenting Our Presence. Till next time, we'll see you again.